This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 31st of August 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 30th of August 2018, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Battle Looms Over New Town, Permanent security plan to cost £125,000, and Sport England drops objection to new centre. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Battle looms over New Town. Campaigners are again preparing to do battle over the site of a proposed new town north of Winchester. Landowners near Mitchell Dever are proposing a 6,000-home new town near Mitchell Dever Station, nearly 30 years after the site was first proposed. The family of John Magnier, the Irish bloodstock multimillionaire, has suggested the potential of the site to the City Council as it conducts a review of its local plan. The Magniers bought the Sutton Scotney estate a couple of years ago for a reported £45 million from Zurich Insurance. Local people say they will fight any fresh proposals. Since 1990, they have defeated numerous attempts to have the land earmarked for a new town of up to 12,500 houses. The proposed site this time is smaller, lying south of Blackwood, east of the mainline railway and west of the A33. Tessa Robertson, chairman of the Dever Society, formed to fight the 1990 scheme, said information was sketchy, but they were seeking more information from the City Council. All we have had is confirmation from the City Council strategic planning team that a proposal has gone into them. We know nothing more. It is a very large scheme. Development has been proposed since 1990. We have fought it. The whole area is opposed to it. It is the wrong kind of housing in the wrong place. Since 1990, we have been fortunate to have the support of Winchester City Council. William Helen, the chairman of Mitchell Dever Parish Council, said, "This is a substantial development in an area which should not be developed. We have always been opposed to it. Developing here would be providing homes for people from London. Development in Hampshire should be further to the south." The parish council will meet next week, although there is currently nothing formal to discuss. Tenant farmer Douglas Patterson, former chairman of the Dever Society, said, "I think and hope it's mainly a case of the Magniers trying to keep their hope value alive rather than a realistic bid for a massive development. It has arisen as a last-minute response to Winchester City Council's call for sites, in which they invite proposals to come forward before producing a long-term plan. Again, I hope the same arguments will kick into the long grass, i.e. it would be a move towards a conurbation from Basingstoke to Southampton, which would destroy the heart of Hampshire. And the City Council has plenty of better sites in consideration already. On the other hand, the politics of housing is subject to change, so we have to be prepared to fight." Winchester and Chalmersford MP Steve Brine said, "How many different versions of no, we do have to get, we do, no, we do, oh, sorry, this is a bit confusing. How many different versions of no, do we have to give on this one? I think that we'd give up on this one. This is all very premature and should come to nothing, given the well-managed progress Winchester has made on delivering new homes. Nonetheless, I suggest Magniers read up on recent history, where they will find out the tsunami of local opposition they will face if they revive these ill-judged new town proposals. My advice is don't go there, because we will be well organised and up for the fight. A city council spokesman said, earlier this year, the council issued a call for sites to scope all potential land to be considered for development through the local plan process. Over 200 sites were submitted, and they are currently being evaluated as part of this process as the council rolls forward its local plan to 2036. The council intends to publish the Strategic Housing and Economic Land Availability Assessment, known as SHELA, with a double A at the end, by the end of the year, which will list all of the sites submitted for consideration. Savills, agents for the Magniers, was unavailable for comment.
Permanent security plan to cost £125,000. Civic chiefs are set to spend £125,000 on new security measures to replace the controversial grey concrete blocks on Winchester High Street. Winchester City Council has unveiled plans to replace the barriers installed in the city centre last winter with a more permanent solution. According to the plans, the City Council would fund the majority of the work, spending £75,000, whilst Hampshire County Council would cover the remaining £50,000. As previously reported, the current barriers were installed in Winchester following fears that the city could be hit by a Nice-style terror attack. Following that attack in 2016, as well as similar incidents in Westminster and Barcelona last year, which saw vehicles being driven at crowds of pedestrians, Councillor Linda Gemmell asked at a council meeting in November what was to stop terrorists driving a lorry past King Alfred's statue and hitting pedestrians in the Broadway and High Street. Now the plan is to replace the temporary barriers with a permanent mix of bollards, planters and seating. City and Council Councillor Jan Warwick, who has been working on the plan, said, "We are very limited because they have to meet a security standard. We've gone for the nicest for what is available." Councillor Warwick added that the council has also been limited in its choice by the utility cables under the High Street and the possibility of sensitive archaeology. She also said that next year work is set to be carried out on the High Street and that an idea to improve the visual appeal would be to put LED lighting in the pavement. If the decision made by Councillor Guy Ashton, City Portfolio Holder for Finance, is confirmed, the new security measures are expected to be in place before the busy Christmas period. The report, issued by Councillor Ashton, said, quote, "The dark granite-clad planters combined with hardwood seating is one of the more elegant designs for Winchester High Street within the restrictions," unquote. Anyone wanting to comment before the decision is made can do so by contacting Richard Botham before 5 p.m. on September the 3rd. Call 01962 848 421. That's 01962 848 421.
Sport England drops objection to new centre. Sporting chiefs have withdrawn their objection to Winchester's planned £38 million leisure centre following talks with the City Council. It comes after a holding objection lodged by Sport England sparked a strong rebuttal by the City Councillor leading the project, Lisa Griffiths. Now, following additional details being supplied by the Council, it has been described as a significant improvement on existing facilities. Owen Neal, Sport England Planning Manager, told the Council, "We are satisfied that the proposed new leisure centre will represent a significant improvement on the existing facilities at River Park, including an improved and increased swimming offer and sports hall space." The further information provided demonstrates that the impact on the playing field can be suitably mitigated in accordance with the Council's recently adopted playing pitch strategy. On that basis, Sport England considers that the benefits to sport arising from the new facility outweigh the detriment caused by the loss of playing field, and we are content to withdraw our holding objection. As previously reported, Sport England had criticised the scheme for the Garrison Ground in Bar End, which is set to open in 2021. The 9-page critique sent to the planners, including feedback from several other sporting bodies, with concerns ranging from a lack of detail over mitigation measures for the loss of a sports pitch to the size of the sports hall and its glazing. Mr. Neil said, Sport England is content that a proper assessment of the qualitative issues affecting the playing field pitches at King George V has been carried out, and that a suitable scheme for improvement works and ongoing maintenance has been identified. Councillor Lisa Griffiths, chairman of the Leisure Centre Committee, said, as I'm sure you can imagine, we are delighted, as it shows that we've listened to the sporting comments and the measures around these concerns are acceptable. Previously, she had described Sport England's comments as baffling and appallingly inaccurate. The scheme is set to go to Council Planning Committee next month.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements, which will be followed by Christian comment. Alderton, Lynn Alderton, on the 19th of August. Benest, Peter Bramwell Benest, on the 19th of August, aged 78. Buchan, Scott Buchan, on the 18th of August, aged 62. Cruden, David Cruden, at home on the 13th of August, aged 80. Dean, Molly Dean, on the 22nd of August, aged 89. Pierce, Margaret Winifred Pierce, on the 17th of August, aged 87. Spice, Patricia Annetta, known as Pat Spice, on the 18th of August, aged 90. Stratton, Harry Jack, known as Bill Stratton, at home on the 18th of August.
Christian comment this week is written by Rosemary A. Baker, and she entitles it The Connections of Grave P84. Recently, I officiated at the interment of both my mother's ashes and an aunt who was also my godmother. They both died some time ago, but it has taken some years to sort out the complexities associated with Grave P84. The grave of my grandparents, who were my father's parents, where they were to be placed. The ashes of my father and his youngest brother were interred there many years ago, with very little problem. However, the rules governing the interment of ashes and the management of cemeteries has changed in the intervening years. Grave P84 is, or should I say was, apparently owned by my father's now very elderly twin brother, who lives a long way from Hampshire on the Welsh border in Shropshire. This was news to him, but as the last surviving child, he had inherited it. If he hadn't been alive, I'm not sure how the ownership would have been worked out. But in order for the new rules to be applied and matters simplified, it was suggested the ownership of the grave should be transferred to a member of the next generation, one who lived perhaps in Hampshire. So my sister now owns Grave P84. The original plan had been for the ashes of the wife of the brother already interred there to be placed there along with my mother's. Now, another of my father's siblings wished her ashes to also be placed there. In the intervening years, with retirements and house moves, we had lost addresses to contact cousins to make arrangements. Save by Facebook, we discovered the ashes of the aunt originally intended to join her husband had also changed her mind, and her ashes had been scattered at sea. Countless emails and misunderstandings later, 14 people gathered for the combined ceremony, followed by lunch. We were connected by shared grandparents, by aunts and uncles and cousins, and by grave P84. The ceremony and lunch enabled us to share memories, photographs, and our shared heritage. Hopefully, better contact can be maintained for future generations. We all agreed it had been worth the effort, and our parents would be proud of us. The connection, the word is written in inverted commas, is the name by which the Methodist Church in the United Kingdom is known. This is the connected community of the local Methodist churches. This sense of being connected makes a difference to how the Methodist Church as a whole is structured. At its heart is an understanding of the Christian community as the body of Christ. Just as a human body contains different limbs and organs that depend on each other, so should the Christian community. There are many other examples of connectedness. Indeed, so also should the human race, whether religious or not. Perhaps the world would be a better place if we learnt or relearn mutual dependence and connectedness.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860836, that's 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or by writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll start off with the first letter,
which is from Chris O'Neill, Deputy Chairman of Hampshire Unison Retired Members Section. And it's entitled OAP Assault. Sir, once again, Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, using a strangely loaded questionnaire, is scheming to get government support to introduce charging for pensioners' bus passes and each individual journey travelled. Last year, he made his first effort to convince government that the law be altered to allow his parsimonious policy. His effort was rejected. Perhaps I'm cynical in thinking the government refusal was linked to them looking over their shoulders at their partners from Northern Ireland, the DUP, who have a noble stated policy not to reduce pensioners' rights. This is a government clearly sharing Hampshire's hostility to pensioners, as displayed by their media campaign and manifesto pledge to remove the triple lock protection of the already inadequate state pension. Based on average earnings, this is the lowest state pension of all 37 members of the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development. Mr. Perry wishes to attack one of many pensioners' most prized rights. These are the same pensioners, 18% of whom live in poverty, 40% of whom suffer limiting long-standing illness, and 1.2 million have care needs which are not met. There are endless examples that pensioners are already a deprived group. Despite this, they contribute £61 billion more to the economy than they receive in pension benefits and other services. Public services have already been cut to the point that they are in some cases ineffective, with remaining staff, after redundancies and reorganisations, overwhelmed and depressed. Mr. Perry's time would be better spent convincing his friends in central government to introduce the policies necessary to bring these 8 years of deprivation to an end. That's from Chris O'Neill, Deputy Chairman, Hampshire Unison Retired Members Section, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Dick Selwood writes on the same subject, but somewhat more briefly. Senior bus passes, it's headed. Sir, the debate on bus passes seemed to ignore the fact that Hampshire County Council administers the scheme as part of a national programme. Senior bus passes are recognised across Britain, with some restrictions. Will holders of passes issued in Southampton or Stockport also be required to pay the surcharge? Perhaps the County Council might also consider asking for a voluntary contribution when the pass is renewed. That's from Dick Selwood, Northview, Oramzaba, Winchester.
Think again, says Caroline Andrews. Sir, Angela Craig, in your edition of August the 23rd, wrote a moving letter imploring people to visit Salisbury to give it a boost following its economic slump after the recent poisoning incidents. I would love to visit Salisbury, but it's not the easiest place to get to if you can't drive. There's no longer a direct bus from Winchester, and there's no direct rail connections for many years. Also, tying up with some other letters in that edition, the County Council is proposing a 50p levy on all bus journeys. This means that, apart from taking most of the day to get to or from Winchester to Salisbury via Southampton on the bus, at 50p per journey, it would cost £2 in bus fares, that is, four journeys each way. Now, that would not be too bad if the levy stayed pinned at 50p per journey, but I have a feeling that the price will creep up gradually, so that in a year or so after implementation, it will be 75p, then £1, and so on. It doesn't just apply to trips outside Winchester. How about people who live in, say, Stanmore and want to go to Sainsbury's in Badger Farm, Aldi in Week, or Tesco in Winnell, and have to change buses in town in order to get there? They would also have to pay £2. No, Hampshire County Council, think again. Caroline Andrews, The Broadway, Winchester.
Simon Lever writes about our local glory. Sir, tourism, and especially tourists from abroad, is vital to the general well-being and positive impression of Winchester in all its glory. The new Tourist Information Centre is a credit to the city and all it has to offer. The variety of attractions Winchester and surrounding area has to offer within walking distance is positively awesome. Visitors from France, especially Normandy, may seek to gain a different perspective of the Norman period, and German tourists, the Saxon element, which contributed to our ancient culture and English language. The attraction of the old Roman ruins and their archaeological significance cannot be discounted. From the cathedral to the great hall to the castle, remains to the water meadows, Winchester is seen by visitors the world over as a beacon of historical significance. That's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Richard Evans writes, smaller is better. Sir, the Chronicle front page report, August the 16th, shows that despite councillors' grandiose plans to move the sports centre from River Park to Bar End, they have not addressed the obvious question, what to do with the existing site. The current location is so well suited to serving the health and recreational needs of the city's own residents and those who come here to work and shop that it seems foolish to move the leisure centre elsewhere without a thought-out answer. A cultural centre, a museum, or a Turner Sims-type concert hall sounds worthy, but let's be realistic. How many people visit our existing museums? What will happen to the Theatre Royal if a similar size concert hall is built? Remember that the council decision to build the performance space at the Discovery Centre was the death knell for the much-loved and much-missed Tower Arts Centre. If anything, Winchester lacks smaller venues able to support local artists, musicians and youth groups. Nutshell Arts, as reported in your paper, are starting to address this with plans to adapt the old antique market. Purpose-built facilities could be provided at River Park, exploiting potential links with the School of Art next door. The Chronicle reports that the tennis courts and artificial pitches and bowl centre are to stay at River Park. Ideally, they would be supported by changing rooms and some reception admin facilities, so why not include some gym machines and exercise studios and a more prominent and accessible cafe and bar, together with rooms for small-scale rehearsal, performance and exhibition purposes? That's from Richard Evans, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Another letter from Simon Lever, and he entitles this one, Huge Potential. Sir, I'm all for Winchester being promoted as a centre for heritage, culture and the musical arts. The feasibility of building both a concert hall and an Anglo-Saxon museum celebrating the development of the English language is enticing, as written in the Chronicle of August the 16th. If it were feasible for both to be constructed on the River Park Leisure Centre site, it should be considered by the informal policy group. A concert hall and a museum would further enhance Winchester's attraction to tourism, especially foreign tourists, and also address the growing number of students. The overall effect would be to attract further investment resulting in jobs, and enhance Winchester's attractiveness as the place to invest in, to study, live and work. Winchester's historic significance as the former capital of England under Alfred the Great encompasses Roman, Saxon, and the far-reaching consequences of the Norman conquest in 1066. The potential is truly awesome. We should sing its praises. So writes Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This letter is not by Simon Lever. it's by Elizabeth Fawn, who says, Films too, that's T-double-O. Sir, it was good to see all the letters in support of a future cultural use for River Park, whether it will be in the adapted existing building or a new one on the site. However, while I support the calls for a concert hall, I would like to urge that it should be able to show films as well. There won't be concerts every night, maybe not even every week. I feel that there is actually a greater need for a new cinema. Every man, controlled from outside Hampshire, holds a monopoly and increasingly raises prices. This can't just be to pay for the refurbishment, with legroom so great that the front row is only a few feet from the screen and is rarely used. I was also pleased to see several mentions of a possible museum of Anglo-Saxon history. But don't let's forget the English project, launched some time ago through the university, which is also seeking a home in our city. The new or adapted building should be big enough in its present footprint to accommodate these as well. Elizabeth Thorne, Airlie Lane, Winchester.
And I have another letter on the same subject. This time it is from Eileen Berry, who is City Councillor for St Barnabas Ward. And it's headed, Size Counts. Sir, I have been reading with great interest all the letters in the Hampshire Chronicle in regards to a concert hall and indeed an art centre. And as I have been a great supporter and will continue to be of those projects, plus the Anglo-Saxon Museum, I think there ought to be some soul searching on this, as it is becoming clear what it is that is needed. Let's take the Anglo-Saxon Museum. First, it cannot be, to my opinion, at River Park. It has to be central, to link up with the Great Hall, the Cathedral, the City Museum in the square, and the museum that is being overshadowed, the military museums and the Gurkha Museum. The tourist will be able to access easily if this is in the city somewhere. Now the concert hall. I don't think it's understood. If you're just looking for 400 seats, that's not enough for the furtherment of the arts musically, for orchestra and concert plus ballet and opera. That's just an ordinary stopgap with no imagination whatsoever. A concert hall worth its salt has to be used all the time. What is needed here now is all the interested people, those with knowledge of the arts and what is required, should get together, making a committee to discuss this. Because not only do we want a concert hall, we want a permanent art centre. And to think of this project in a Mickey Mouse sort of way is actually not going to produce anything near what is required. It is an opinion, but a valid opinion from experience. That's from Eileen Berry, City Councillor for St Barnabas Ward, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Mark Rowe entitles his letter, Confused. Sir, recently I was walking in the River Park area. The area around the leisure centre is of true natural beauty. But why outside the leisure centre is there rubbish around, even on their football pitches? How can the current people who run River Park be given a new leisure centre to run when they cannot even look after the current one? Even just by keeping the football pitches clean outside of the leisure centre... Sorry, I waffle. Not me personally.
Oh, I see.
I watched a game of walking football. I spoke to a man on the sidelines who explained it was Knights Park versus King Alfred's Foot Soldiers, the local team. I watched with joy the local side go 3-0, then throw it away in the last few minutes. I spoke again with the same man. He said walking football was for all ages. Then I heard another say, no, it's for over 50s only. Which is it? I wonder, can younger people join the team or not? I looked at the Hamps FA site. It said Tom Crowe was in charge of the team. When I contacted the council, I got told he had left. Now I'm even more confused. How do I get hold of the team to join? Can any fellow reader help or Winchester City Council? So writes Mark Rowe of Week.
Rubbish service, writes Cynthia Goodwin. Sir, I write regarding the execrable service received from Biffa Refuse Collection. The situation in the city centre appears at breaking point. For several months, we have tolerated either a partial or non-existent bin collection. The courtyard keys have been consistently broken or lost, and the overflowing bins left in situ. In the hope of an improvement, we have replaced the large unwieldy bins with smaller and easier to manage ones, had the doors removed to facilitate easier access, and whenever possible, leave the courtyard gate open. The situation, however, remains unchanged. Last Thursday, I witnessed the Biffa waste vehicle drive right past without stopping. No one wishes to have this malodorous health hazard on their doorstep. Flies abound inside and outside our properties, and rats have also been seen. I wish to add that Andrew Turner at Winchester City Council has made useful suggestions and done his best to rectify the issue. Despite fines levied, Biffa appear impervious to change. That's from Cynthia Goodwin, Printers Row, Winchester.
Chris Higgins writes, Market Dismay. Sir, I was dismayed to read in last week's Chronicle that the City Council are considering cancelling the farmers' market again next June to facilitate the Criterium Cycle Fest. Winchester's Farmers' Market, WFM, was recognised as the largest and probably the best in the country. It really flourished at its original location in the Middlebrook Street car park, with frequent visits from TV crews filming celebrity chefs like Rick Stein. So it had a flamboyant, almost continental atmosphere, celebrating the best of Hampshire produce in a crowded marketplace, as your photo in last week's paper shows. When the council moved the WFM onto the High Street, it became fragmented and lost much of its special feeling. Sometimes the market was moved again or split into different areas, and on occasions it's been cancelled altogether for parades, cycle races or cycling events. Councillor Miller states that he is unwilling to protect WFM from further diary clashes, but I wonder if he is aware that he is jeopardising something special that contributes to the quality of life and culture of Winchester. As Councillor Miller represents Bishop Waltham, he may never have been to the WFM, so may not understand the damage done in disrupting the market. As a result, many of the original traders have given up and is now only about half the size that it used to be before it was moved. As Councillor Hutchison points out, June is the peak season for local fruit, flowers and vegetables, and the council's suggestion that they can always sell their perishable produce somewhere else is insensitive. It also shows a lack of understanding towards the citizens of Winchester who enjoy being regular customers. What a pity Winchester City Council can't recognise the need to nurture WFM rather than undermining it so often. As the WFM is only held twice a month, why can't the Cycle Fest be moved to a different weekend when it may clash with other events, but none is as special or as deserving of protection as the Winchester Farmers Market in peak season? That was from Chris Higgins, Edgar Villiers, Winchester.
Phil Yates, our old friend, writes on Carnival Revival. Sir, the article by Ian Crump regarding the comeback of the Winchester Carnival in 1988, as the Chronicle in August the 23rd mentioned, made interesting reading. But I remember the Carnival weeks of 1969, 1971, and 1973. Yes, these lasted the whole week, which comprised donkey races at Winton House School Grounds in Andover Road, St. Giles Fair, held in Wolsey Castle Grounds, medieval dress essential, High Street shop window dressing competition, culminating with a grand carnival procession with Miss Winchester and her attendants, starting from Peninsula Barracks Square and ending up in North Walls Recreation Park. The week-long programme was organised by Douglas Bylett, the Secretary of Winchester Chamber of Commerce. How do I recall these events so vividly? I was an amateur filmmaker in those days and was commissioned by Dougie to film all the events, so I had my camera with me while working at Godwin's. Solicitors, ready for the call. I even managed to get into one of the high-up rooms at the barracks to get an aerial shot of the carnival. Once the events had ended, I got down to edit the film, adding commentary and music, ready for showing at various venues. Is there a local organisation willing to make another comeback to mark the 50th anniversary next year of the 1969 Carnival Week? Maybe the organisers of Eastleigh Carnival could advise. I am too old to partake at 91. So writes Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
This letter is from Councillor David McLean, entitled Final Act of Mayor McLean's Year. Sir, my last act as the past Mayor of Winchester has been to hand out the cheques that were collected for the Mayor's charities over the year at a small lunch in Abbey House. Every penny raised has been split between the MS Society, Canine Partners and the Bishop's Waltham North Pond Conservation Group. Events included Greek nights, tapas nights, curry lunches, marvellous events bringing together the choirs of Winchester, support from the Morris Men, support from Ocean Brass at our prom. A huge thank you to the Winchester Freemasons for their support with generous donations and time. Another thank you to the current Lady Mayoress for organising an event on the River Itchen at the home of George Hollingbury MP. Santander were very supportive, match funding the prom charity donations. Thank you. Finally, an enormous thank you to the officers of Winchester City Council for all their help and support. That's from Councillor David McLean, Morley Drive, Bishop's Waltham.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago. And that will then be followed by the Hampshire Chronicle editorial and first person.
200 years ago was Monday, August the 31st, 1818. Early on Sunday morning last, the dwelling house of the Reverend Mr. Pedder at Andover was broken into and a bureau forcibly opened, which fortunately contained nothing of any value. The villains, being heard by the family, immediately made their escape, taking with them a hat and a shawl. On the same morning, the dwelling house of a person of the name of Hampton in Barlow's Lane, a dealer in earthenware, was also entered in the absence of the family from home, and cash and other property to the amount of £50 stolen therefrom. On Wednesday night last, the house of Mr. Wheeler in King's Head Street was forcibly broken into and property to the value of £10 stolen.
100 years ago, Saturday, August the 31st, 1918. Tributes to the splendid work of RSM W.F. Leach, a former assistant master at St. Thomas's Boys' School, Winchester, and whose death in Turkey has already been reported in our columns, continue to be received. One that has been sent us this week is from Lance Corporal J.T. Mills, the first of the 4th Hampshire Regiment, a prisoner of war at Tel El Halif, who writes, "He was the finest man we prisoners had. What he did for us, both at Afyon, Kara Hissar, and down here, can never be forgotten by any of us."
50 years ago, Saturday, August the 31st, 1968. The Committee of Otterbourne Appeal Fund have held a further meeting in the Village Hall, Otterbourne, and it was then made known that objections to the proposals to build a refuse disposal plant, incinerator and depot on land of Poles Lane, Otterbourne, had resulted in the scheme being deferred for the time being, and that in due course it would be a matter for the Minister of Housing and Local Government to decide whether or not a public inquiry should be held. It was reported that, as a result of the activities of the committee, it was apparent that the majority of residents of the parish of Otterbourne and the Shepherd's Lane area of Compton were opposed to the scheme, and so far the sum of £164 had been donated to the fund.
25 years ago, Friday, August the 27th, 1993. A meeting is being held in Winchester College next Thursday in an attempt to persuade the City Council to defer a decision on the plan for developing Peninsula Barracks. An alternative scheme aimed at conserving the Victorian buildings on the upper and lower barracks has been devised by the Winchester architect Hugh Thomas. The new proposals were presented to councillors by Marcus Binney, president of SAVE, S-A-V-E, Britain's Heritage and Architecture Correspondent of the Times. As the Hampshire Chronicle reported on August the 13th, Mr Thomas said his plan would greatly lower the density of the development and open up the barracks for people of Winchester to walk through and enjoy. In the present scheme, which the Planning Committee is set to approve on September the 9th, the Victorian buildings of the upper barracks will be left intact, but 9 Victorian buildings on the lower barracks will be demolished. Ownership of the site is between the Crown and the Ministry of Defence. Mr Thomas commented, "I hope the Winchester councillors will defer. I hope that they will have the courage to give Save Britain's Heritage time to persuade the Crown and the MOD to amend the application. I am confident that given time we can submit a detailed application. The decision on the 9th is so critical to the life of the city."
Now we come to the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle in its 243rd year. The wrong scheme in the wrong place. Mitchell Dever New Town is probably the longest running planning issue in Hampshire history. An entirely new settlement for the countryside around Mitchell Dever Station was first proposed in 1990 by the local landowner Eagle Star Insurance. Local people mobilised to fight the plans, and for the last 28 years have succeeded in preserving one of the finest areas of open countryside in southern England. The would-be developer moved on to Zurich Insurance Group, and now it seems to Irish businessman John Magnier. As the front page story reveals, Mr. Magnier has proposed part of his estate to be suitable for 6,000 homes at some point in the future. It is not. It is the wrong scheme, in the wrong place, at the wrong time. Psychogeographers might tell you that Mitchell Dever is the first area as you come out of London where you leave the gravitational pull of the capital, escaping from the confines of suburbia into the rural landscape. This specialness would be wrecked should a new town be constructed at Mitchell Dever Station. It is wholly unnecessary. Winchester City Council has shown it has an adequate supply of housing for the foreseeable future. New housing, which people have to accept must come, should be focused on more sustainable locations near existing settlements.
First Person this week is written by George Hayter, and he's entitled his piece "Sort Trash Even If It's Dumped." It's one more chore, but it only takes minutes. I might have to rinse one or two bottles and stamp on them so they fit in the green bin. And every few days I might have to take scissors to a cereal box or a cardboard box so that they too fit in the bin. And of course, old chronicles end up in the same place. My recycling adds up to just 15 minutes a week. Not bad for something that contributes to the health of the planet. But occasionally I wonder if it might be a waste of 15 minutes. The doubts come when one of those newspaper articles appears, or it might be a report on TV news. You know, the sort of annoying expose. Tons of plastic, paper and cans, painstakingly separated by households, is not being recycled by the authorities, but is being dumped into landfill. Stories like that do make me question the worth of my rinsing, crushing and cutting. But they will never make me quit recycling. The way I see it, some landfilling or incineration of my carefully separated recyclables is acceptable, inevitable even. Things do go wrong, that's life. Recycling household waste involves a whole chain of processes in which separation by householders is just one of many links. After initial sorting by us conscientious recyclers, Other links include Biffa's separate collection of recyclable and non-recyclable waste for Winchester City Council, further sorting, cleaning, numerous operations to turn the waste into new material, and not least, finding firms that want to buy the recycled stuff that comes out at the end of it all. There must be other links in recycling that I've overlooked, but even with my limited knowledge of the chain, it's not hard to think of things that could go wrong. Lorries breaking down, firms going bust, depots swamped by growing volume of trash, staff going sick, staff going on strike, the world price of recycled paper going down. We householders do more than provide the raw material. We are the engine that started recycling and now keep it rolling. Without us feeding material in, it would be hard for politicians to justify expenditure on the lorries, depots, conveyor belts and manpower needed to recycle more. Without the politicians putting the money in, it would also be hard for firms to risk inventing in the chain. Those disappointing newspaper stories about recyclables going to landfill are not all bad. They create a sense of outrage among recyclers that can lead to action. Recyclers are voters, and politicians who want to get re-elected will want to please voters. Through that democratic mechanism, ministers and councillors will increase facilities for recycling as we increase the amount of recyclable rubbish that we separate. They won't want any of those nasty newspaper articles naming them. Weak links may be more common in recycling than in other fields because recycling is relatively new. It's hard to keep all the links up to strength when the chain is a fast expanding industry, increasingly expected to supply global manufacturing. The necessity of getting participation from the public reminds me of 1970, when Royal Mail was trying to introduce postcodes. "Remember to use the postal code," the public was urged through advertising by Royal Mail, although there were in the whole UK at that time still only a handful of post offices that were automated to use the codes. As with recycling, the vital first thing needed for postcodes to work was public participation. If recyclables separated by householders are dumped in landfills, is it still worthwhile for households to continue sorting their rubbish? Certainly. We can't expect politicians and industrialists to keep investing in recycling if we, the public, don't demonstrate long-term commitment. That means sorting our rubbish, even when there are setbacks elsewhere in the chain.
Now, a few items of what's on. This coming week, the Flower Festival returns to the Cathedral with a display entitled Illumination, a Festival of Flowers from the 5th to the 9th of September. That's 5th of September is Wednesday of next week. This year's Flower Festival will feature a stunning array of flower arrangements inspired by the magnificent Winchester Bible, the largest and finest surviving 12th century English Bible. So ticket prices range from £7 to £12 with a variety of concessions available and can be booked via the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. So that's the Flower Festival in the Cathedral from the 5th to the 9th of September. Following the success of the original King Alfred running day in May, the Friends of King Alfred Buses has confirmed its plans for Saturday, the 15th of September, as part of Winchester Heritage Open Days. The main theme will be a twilight running day involving up to 7 King Alfred buses. Trips will start from the Broadway between 4pm and 9pm with a vehicle display at 3pm at the Cattle Market car park off Worthy Lane. On Friday, September the 21st, two top journalists will be in discussion in Winchester to raise funds for a charity that helps ex-prison inmates. Luke Harding will be talking about his latest book, Collusion, Donald Trump and Russia, with Kate Adie. The book, an investigation into the president's links with Putin, has sold well in the United States and in the UK and has topped the non-fictional bestseller list with the New York Times. The event is at St John's Church, St John's Street, on Friday, the 21st of September at 6:30 p.m. It will raise funds for Footprints, a mentoring service for ex-offenders coming out of prison in Dorset and Hampshire, and Kate Adie is the patron of Footprints. Admission will be £15 to include wine and canapes. And then on the next day, that's Saturday, September the 22nd, at 7:30 p.m, the Reading Phoenix Choir will be putting on a concert at St Mary's Church in Kingsworthy. For tickets, call Jill Froud on 01962 88 2217. That's 01962 88 2217 for the Reading Phoenix Choir at St Mary's Church, Kingsworthy, at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, the 22nd of September. And there is an ongoing invitation from the Winchester Dramatic Society to drop in for a chat on the first Saturday of each month from 10 a.m. to 12:30 at the Chesil Theatre, which is in Chesil Street. They invite you to drop in through a little red door to find out what they do and assure you of a warm welcome, a cup of coffee and lots more. Lighting up times, sunrise these days is around 6:20 a.m. in the morning and sunset is around 7:50 p.m. in the evening. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now move on to items of general news interest.
And the first item is headed Safety Measures at Redundant Barracks. Work is set to be carried out on the redundant army base on the edge of Winchester, currently being eyed for development. Bushfield Camp is the subject of a public consultation launched by landowner the Church Commissioners over developing part of the site. They envisage a high-quality employment campus on the former military parade ground of about 15 hectares off Badger Farm Road, disused since the 1970s. Now the Church Commissioners have been told it can carry out work to lower the height of buildings on the site by 1 foot 5 inches. It follows an application being lodged with Winchester City Council, which said there were health and safety concerns. The Church Commissioners said in the plans, known unauthorised use of the buildings and antisocial behaviour, damage to buildings by trespassers. As previously reported, the Commissioners say that most of the site, the area south of Whiteshute Ridge, will be managed to improve its wildlife value, becoming a new country park. Badger Farm Road would be widened and the Badger Farm roundabout would be modified. The Church Commissioners have appointed Knight Frank to market the site and find a development partner. For decades, the Commissioners have attempted to develop the area for housing and also a Tesco superstore in the 1980s, but were always resisted by the City Council. The council now views the barracks area as a potential site for commercial development. John Weir, head of strategic land investment for the Church Commissioners, said, "We are committed to working collaboratively with local groups and businesses to ensure that the right outcomes. We look forward to hearing your views as we continue work to realise the full potential of the site." Commissioners said feedback from earlier public consultations in 2016-17 highlighted the possibility of a mix of occupiers from business start-ups to corporates.
Uncovering the secrets of houses. How to find out more about your family home, Matthew Goodwin reports. Have you been inspired by a house through time? Want to become a detective and investigate the hidden stories of your house? Then the rich array of material held by Hampshire Archives and local studies at Hampshire Record Office in Sussex Street, Winchester, can help you. Maps, sale particulars, trade directories, electoral registers, title deeds, photographs and other sources held in their archives can help you uncover the stories of the past. Researching the history of your home can be a rewarding and fulfilling experience, often leading to unexpected discoveries, whether concerning those who used to live there or changes to the actual premises. One particularly useful source for house history are building control plans, which provide a wonderful insight into the changes to properties, both in their physical appearance and how they were used. Building plans occur from the late 19th century onwards as a result of public health acts, which empowered local authorities to make bylaws governing the building of new houses and streets. Applications for new buildings had to be submitted with detailed plans, which usually included sections, elevations, and floor plans. Plans exist not only for individual houses, but also for business and commercial premises, such as hotels, schools, and shops, as well as for extensions and additions to properties, including sheds and porches. Comparing old building plans to the current layout of a building can deliver fascinating views into the developments of households over time and how people lived. As well as being a useful source of information, they are often beautifully detailed and pieces of art in their own right. Digital copies of building plans can make a special and unique gift and can be purchased through Hampshire Archives and local studies. Cross-referencing with other material can help open other avenues for you to explore about the history of your home. Examining census entries, trade and street directories, electoral registers can offer you information about those who were living in your home, their occupations and their families. They may also inform you how the property was used, whether it was residential or used for a business. On September the 18th, between 2 and 4 p.m., Hampshire Archives and Local Studies at the HRO, I'm not quite sure what that means.
Hampshire Record Office.
Oh, thank you. Hampshire Record Office will be hosting a house history workshop to help you get started with your research. The workshop will guide you through the array of documents and online resources which you will need to use to become a house detective. The workshop will include a small display of documents relating to house history to help provide you with an insight into what you might discover. The cost is £20, advance booking required, and you would phone on 01962 846 154. That's 01962 846 154. And this article is accompanied by from extremely fine drawings of the Fording Bridge workhouse, showing the main block, transverse sections, and various other sections online in various directions, and very detailed but beautifully described and illustrated. And it also helps by showing you the current picture of Hampshire Record Office in Winchester.
Pupils pleased with their GCSE results. The atmosphere at the Westgate School was electrifying as students went back one last time to collect their GCSE results. This year saw previous numbers being beaten, with record amounts of pupils achieving grade 7 or above. Among the celebrating students was Harry Bravery from Winchester. His results consisted of only grades 8 and 9, the two highest on the spectrum. He will be attending Peter Simmons College in September. Faye Dean, head teacher at Westgate, was in particularly good spirits as her students opened their results. Ralph's results were also improved at Henry Beaufort School. Head teacher Sue Hurl said, "The students and staff worked tirelessly in the run-up to the exams. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the students for their commitment to their studies, as well as the staff for their determination to give every child a successful outcome." Perrins School in Alsford achieved some remarkable grades in the 2018 GCSE examinations. King's School joined the Winchester Success Celebrations as grades appear to be higher than last year at the school. Head teacher Mr. Matthew Leeming said, "We are really delighted with the grades our pupils have achieved."
Dedicated health staff awarded for their efforts. Committed hospital staff have been praised for their dedication at a special event hosted by the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. The WOW lunch, that is capitals W-O-W, exclamation mark, and I'm reliably informed by a resident expert that it stands for Women on Wednesdays, as opposed to WOT, which is Women on Thursdays, of course. The WOW lunch celebrated 28 individuals and 8 teams who were put forward by grateful patients, relatives and by fellow staff. Clinical, administrative and support staff were nominated for the care and support in their work, often going above and beyond their call of duty. Becky Toms, community children's nurse, won her award for the devotion and compassion she showed to a young girl and her family, who described Becky as a friend, agony aunt, nurse, play worker and a shoulder to cry on. Becky said, "I was nominated by a parent of a child I looked after for 3 years. The parents thought that I went above and beyond. It's great for the good things to be recognised. It makes me feel really proud." Chris Wilger and his colleagues in the Paediatric Diabetes Specialist Nursing Team were nominated by parents for their commitment, which includes running yearly residential activity days for young diabetic patients.
A dispatch from the Mongolian steppes.
What?
A winched man has completed an expedition in Mongolia led by Colonel John Blashford Snell. Peter Manns travelled through the west of the Central Asian country alongside 23 international volunteers. The self-funded trip began in the city of Khovd, that is spelt K-H-O-V-D, Khovd, on July the 7th, and lasted 3 weeks. Whilst travelling through the desert towards the mountains, the group found themselves welcomed into the homes of the nomadic natives. Mr. Manns, age 66, of Bath Place, said, "You couldn't go past a yurt without being invited in, really. They all wanted to know where you're from and how you live. We also got to watch a community festival called the Nadam," spelled N-A-A-D-A-M, the Nadam Festival, which was like their version of the Olympics. They competed in horse riding and archery, wrestling. It was exhilarating being in a part of the world that you don't usually get to see. Across the 3 weeks, the explorers travelled mostly on horseback and recorded sightings of over 158 different species, including the rare Przewalski horse. But the expedition had another aim, aside from experiencing the vast wildlife and culture. Equipped with a doctor and a dentist, Mr. Blashford Snell's team manned pop-up clinics and distributed reading glasses, books, dolls and puppets to the local people. Mr. Manns commented, "It was a very rewarding indeed." This is the third expedition that he has completed with the Colonel, and when asked about him, he said, "He's great, an absolute one of a kind." Colonel Blashford Snell said, The success of the expedition in this remote region was largely due to the kind support of the Mongolian organisers, scientists and herdsmen. And in spite of some testing terrain and inclement weather, our international team managed to accomplish the aims and provide some very worthwhile help in the local communities. And this article is accompanied by two photographs, the first one showing Peter Manns, complete with a riding helmet and trousers and, I suppose, a warm jacket, and also Colonel John Blashford Snell, in very barren mountainous country. And alongside this, there's some rather fierce-looking Mongolian people who are going to do some wrestling. I don't think I'd like to meet them in the dark.
Wasting water. A recent survey reveals that Hampshire is wasting water. Soap Makes, a soap supplier, discovered that people in Hampshire were showering more than double the recommended time. The survey deduced that people in the southeast on average spend 9.1 minutes in the shower, in contrast to the 4 minutes that experts recommend. The company decided to hold the survey of 2,000 people across the UK to find out how much water we are actually wasting. A spokesman from Soap Makes said, "Following a summer of heat waves, signs of climate change are more apparent than ever. Experts have been warning us for many years that we need to act now to avoid water shortages in coming years."
Sale of pub garden furniture. The contents of a Winchester pub garden are to be sold for charity before bulldozers move in. Most of the garden of the Queen Inn... Most of the garden of the Queen in Kingsgate Street... That's the Queen Inn.
Yes.
They've left the inn bit out. That's why it's confused me. Are earmarked for development by Winchester College. So landlord Clive Mansell is selling the contents in aid of the Winchester Hospice appeal. Mr. Mansell said the piece of land has had links to brewing for some 300 years, as it was used to grow hops in the early 1700s before becoming a pub garden. A new garden is planned, which will use part of the current car park, but to make space for the construction, a sale of pub items will take place this Sunday, September the 2nd, 12 noon and 4 p.m. It will include unwanted pub and garden furniture, bric-a-brac, shrubs, brollies and even goldfish. Viewing is on Saturday between 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. All proceeds to go to the hospice that is planned for Burrell House on Romsey Road, next to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Mr. Mansell said, "We are unsure when the bulldozers will start, but we've been told that fences marking the new boundaries will be going up within weeks." And this is accompanied by a photograph of a very extensive pub garden at the Queen Inn, and the loss of it will be sorely felt by certain people.
Yes, agreed, yes.
I'll follow that with Winchester is again among the least affordable places. Winchester has been labelled one of the least affordable places to live, according to a new study. Residents can expect to spend 32.9% of their income on rent following the research job for jobs, following the research by jobs website Azunda. The website compared average advertised salaries with average rental figures across the UK to compile lists of the most and least affordable places for renters to live. London was found to be the most expensive, with residents paying 40.8% of salary, while Swindon was the most affordable at 11.5%. That compares to the national average of 22.1%. The study assumes that the cost of monthly rent is equally split between two people sharing a home. Andrew Hunter, co-founder of Adzana, said, "Even though workers may be paid a higher monthly salary, their leftover cash is often smaller after paying steep living costs and local property premiums.
Burglary priority. More than 20 residents met city police officers on Tuesday evening to discuss crime within the Winchester town area. The meeting, held at St Peter's Church in Jury Street, saw an opportunity for concerned residents to share their views on crime in the city. However, the meeting heard that there was little to report. Concerns over some cyclists ignoring highways rules and purse thefts in shops were raised. Residents were given advice on how to prevent thefts while out shopping, and there was also advice on how not to be caught out by ever-changing scam techniques, whether they be in person or online. Neil Parker, part of the local policing team for Winchester Central, said that the team's current priority was tackling burglaries. Neil Parker told residents, "It's not a major problem in Winchester, but it is something we do take seriously." The meeting also heard from Andy Murphy of Winchester City Council's Neighbourhood Services team. He told residents that the council would be meeting new Winchester University students living in the community over the coming weeks in a bid to build a positive relationships with those starting the new academic year. Residents were urged to contact the council or the university when issues arose regarding students so they could take action to stamp out any problems.
Now, this is an item from Belgarum, as you're probably aware. It's an alternative look at the news, and it's headed "Delivering Burgers from Loch Fyne." I think I pronounced burgers right. Deliveroo are celebrating their second anniversary in Winchester. Someone in the food delivery business's head office has been number crunching to analyse the eating habits of Winchester customers. So, here is the top five Deliveroo orders. Are you ready?
Yes, all ears.
Absolutely. American Hot from Pizza Express. Two Hot Wings from KFC. Beef Burger from Loch Fyne. Duck Spring Rolls from Dim Tea. And Chicken Katsu Curry from Wagamama. Yeah. Belgium was surprised that so many people were ordering burgers from seafood specialist Loch Fyne. Deliveroo works with more than 40 restaurants, creating work for more than 25 people, mostly Deliveroo riders. Dan Warren, managing director of Deliveroo in UK and Ireland, said, "Our whole team here at Deliveroo are delighted that our rapid growth in Winchester over the past 2 years means that customers have more choice. Restaurants are able to increase their revenue and riders have the opportunity to choose well-paid, flexible work." The manager at Dim Tea said, "Since we joined Deliveroo, we have seen our output go up considerably, as we have been able to reach customers we could not reach before."
A rundown house plan rejected. Plans for extension to a rundown Winchester suburban home have been thrown out by city councillors. Members of Winchester City Council's planning committee voted unanimously last week to reject the scheme for 46 Harrowdown Badger Farm. The scheme would have seen single-storey front and side extensions, as well as a two-storey rear extension, alterations to the driveway, and a conversion in the loft to create more living space. The committee heard that the house had been poorly maintained, as well as fears over traffic and concerns that it would likely become a student house of multiple occupation. City Councillor Jan Warwick, who represents the Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, is also the area's county councillor, was among those who objected. She said that the plans were more in keeping with a student HMO, which is a house of multiple occupation, than a family residence. A five-bedroom extended property goes against the character of Badger Farm. Councillor Warwick also expressed concerns over parking situation at the property, saying that the garage was too small to use for parking a car and therefore would not be enough off-street spaces. The scheme, which had been recommended for approval by planning officers, also saw objections from City Councillor Brian Laming and Eleanor Bell, who also represent the Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, as well as more than a dozen residents. Among the other criticisms levelled against the scheme were that it was an overdevelopment, overshadowed neighbouring properties, it would be a loss in hedgerows and trees, and would impact on highway safety. Debating the plans, Councillor Jane Rutter said, "I'm afraid I can't support the officer's recommendation. I'm afraid it's overdevelopment. The fact that it has been allowed to rot for 10 years should not force the planning committee to permit anything. It's just outrageous. Very few people, if any, use their garages in Badger Farm for parking their car." Councillors voted to refuse the application on the grounds that it would have an adverse negative impact on the character and appearance of the area, as well as an adverse overbearing impact on the residential amenities of number 45, Harrow Down. And this article is accompanied by some photographs of the property. It's a single isolated property, the large garage, not very well looked after in the garden area, but at least it shows a rooms for people to live in.
Fire service is getting greener. More than 1,000 tonnes of carbon dioxide has been saved by Hampshire's fire service in a drive to reduce its impact on the environment. The Green Project, launched in 2012, will also see carbon reduction that will save taxpayers £230,000 a year, thanks to improved energy efficiency and use of solar panels. The panels have been installed on several fire service buildings, including the shared headquarters with Hampshire Police in Eastleigh. Further green measures, such as improved insulation and heating, have also contributed to the savings. Councillor Chris Carter, chairman of the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority, said, "We set out on an ambitious five-year programme to reduce the carbon footprint of our day-to-day work in a sustainable way. By the end of 2016-17, we were using 17% less energy. Given the major expansion in use of our estate over this period, these savings represent significant success."
Targeted health check for the over 40s. More middle-aged people are to be encouraged to take part in health screening. Hampshire County Council is planning better targeted NHS health checks to detect people with potential problems. As part of a new £9 million contract with health providers starting in April 2019, the council is aiming to increase the uptake of checks, particularly those most at risk of developing heart disease. Councillor Patricia Stallard, Executive Member for Public Health, said the County Council is responsible for ensuring Hampshire residents aged between 40 and 75 are invited for regular health reviews by their GP surgeries. Currently, just under half of those invited take up the offer. This is something we want to see improve, so through a new contract with GPs and other health providers, we are aiming to increase this, particularly amongst patients most at risk of cardiovascular disease. To do this, we are working with the Swan Medical Group in Petersfield to test a range of ways to increase participation. Learning from this trial will be shared with other health providers to help increase the numbers attending, particularly from the high-risk groups. The NHS Health Check Programme aims to prevent heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes and kidney disease, and raise awareness of dementia both across the population and within high-risk and vulnerable groups. Health checks are normally undertaken by health practice nursing teams, and once the assessment is complete, those receiving a check are given advice to help them manage and reduce their risk of becoming unwell. Cardiovascular disease is the second most common cause of death in Hampshire.
Candidates for council by-election. Civic chiefs have confirmed the candidates running in an upcoming Winchester City Council by-election. Voters in the Upper Meon Valley ward will head to the polls on Thursday, September the 20th, following the resignation of Councillor Amber Tressahar, formerly Councillor Thacker, who lives in Cheriton. Fellow Conservative Hugh Lumby of High Street Meonstoke will be hoping to retain the City Council seat for the party, while Lewis North of Cheriton will be standing for the Liberal Democrats, a seat he has contested several times. Labour and the Green Party are also represented by June Kershaw of High Street Droxford and Andrew Wainwright of Shipley Road, Twyford, respectively. The ward covers a large area of the countryside stretching from Cheriton, Kilmerston and Bramdean, south and south-east, towards the villages along the River Meon.
St John's Volunteer Recruitment Drive. Charity St John's Winchester has launched a volunteer recruitment drive to support a new community-based wellbeing service, St John's Hand in Hand. It will be launched as a pilot in the new year. St John's Hand in Hand will support older people to improve their quality of life and well-being by providing a helping hand through personal support and practical help. There are three main elements: befriending, signposting services, and helping older people to live well and independently as long as possible. Martin Lowry, St John's chairman, said, "Our Hand in Hand initiative is a natural progression of our core work, building on the charity's caring principles and values. It's all about helping older people living retain choice and control of their lives and continue to live independently for as long as possible. It complements our almshouses and care home services and adds to our offering of care and friendship." Clive Cook, St John's chief executive, added, "We are thrilled to be launching this pilot service, and we hope that local people of all ages will get on board to help us make it a huge success. We are looking for people who want to become part of a caring community. It's an early stage, so our volunteers will have an opportunity to help shape the service. If you would like to become a key part of the St John's community, then please get in touch."
Hundreds raised through church fate. A church has raised £800 for repairs with its summer fate. The Holy Trinity Church in Upper Brook Street welcomed people to the church with visitors including the Mayor and Mayoress, Councillor Frank Pearson and his wife Anne. A number of stalls lined the church hall while there were various activities in the grounds. Resident Mike Gillott also brought along his 1937 vintage Triumph Vitesse, which was admired by those who came along. The fete was supported by estate agent Dibbles. Organiser Bridget Kimber said, "We had an exhibition of calligraphy and art in the church, and our very talented calligrapher, Marcia Collins, from the cathedral, came and showed us the art of calligraphy. A good day was had by all, and we raised lots of cash for our church repairs. The church will be holding next. The church will be holding a Christmas bazaar in November, on the November the 24th. There's a photograph accompanying this article, which shows. Actually, it's a very wonderful photograph of this Triumph. 1937 vintage Triumph Vitesse. Very smart it was. It is. And it's accompanied by organist and church warden John Perver and the Mayor and Mayoress and organisers Bridget and John Kimber.
Railway is top dog attraction. The Watercress Line has been voted in the top five of the world's 100 most pet-friendly attractions. Around 10,000 animal lovers have voted and said that the line's traditional steam trains that welcome dogs and picture-perfect stops has placed it as the world's fourth best animal attraction. Issy Highmore, Marketing and Events Assistant at the Watercress Line, said, "We are thrilled to have made the list of the top 100 pet-friendly places in the world. We absolutely love inviting dogs onto our trains. Dogs travel free of charge on our railway, and we have water bowls ready for them at every station. We have stunning walks on offer from our four stations across the 10-mile line which runs from the South Downs National Park." The vote was carried out by trusted house sitters and saw more than 54,000 locations worldwide recommended. Tim Lyons, Managing Director of Trusted House Sitters, said, "For the past 2 years, we have logged thousands of recommendations given to us, and the Watercress Line and steam trains are the only form of transport to have made the top 100 list. With so many great sites and works to choose from, it's clear to see why. Number one on the list was the Eden Project in Cornwall."
Gardeners challenged, but are undefeated. Winchester Horticultural Society recently held their annual Open Late Summer Show at Badger Farm Community Centre. Despite the challenges posed by a wet, cold spring and a dry, hot summer, there were enough entries over 90 categories of flowers, flower arrangements, vegetables, fruit, including figs and grapes, and soft fruit to make for varied and colourful displays. The less green-fingered competitors were able to shine in the craft section or show off their photographic skills. Cups and trophies were presented by Winchester Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson, who was accompanied by his wife Anne. He congratulated everyone on their efforts and splendid achievements. A number of visitors also enjoyed the show and rounded off the afternoon with a welcome cup of tea and homemade cake.
Right, on that very positive note, we conclude our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayn and Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.